Monty Alexander on piano and Delfeo Marsalis on trombone with No More Trouble. It's from Alexander's 2006 album, Concrete Jungle, the music of Bob Marley. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And as you know, today is a big day. If you happen to be in Des Moines, Iowa, it's a very big day. It's the last of the so-called debates that the Democrats are having before the first votes. I have some thoughts about that. But I also want to talk about an overarching problem, and that is, what has the Democratic Party become? These debates are being held today with just six people, starting from a long list. They're down to six, all of them white. And supposedly they're talking about the issues affecting the people, but no one of color is on the roster tonight. I have a big problem with that. And not, and in a sense, not really a problem, because this has been a reality for quite some time, that the Democratic Party, which postures itself as the progressive small p, the progressive party, the party of the future, the party that looks toward the future, liberal, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, but look where it is today. And this is where I think we need to start asking questions. I've raised these issues before. What is it signifying? What does it tell us about our times? Even though, of course, we told time and again that things are moving in the right direction, they're seeing more and more new faces coming along. But look what they've done to the new faces. We have to ask some questions here. Is the Democratic Party meant to be of service or use to the larger community, or is it reverting to its old standard of it's all white and we will take care of everything, we're in charge, you don't have to worry a little head about anything, we got it, just vote for us and then disappear? By the way, if you're hearing some noises, this is exactly the time that they decided to prune trees around here, and there are lots of trees, and it's at times like these I recognize that the trees are all right outside my window. Well, that's not true, but it feels like it, because this is going to go on for several hours before they're done. So what do we see as our future in politics? Or what do we see as the future of politics in our future? you have to ask these questions, because it is really hard to stomach the reality tonight, for example. You tune in expecting from a major political party a vigorous debate about the issues of the day, where the party is headed, whether people can see themselves as being well served by voting for this party. And all of this is happening in the total absence, complete absence of anyone of color. As you may recall, Cory Booker, the senator from New Jersey, bowed out of the race. And I think that was a tragedy. Not that I like Booker in particular. I think it was a tragedy for politics and specifically for the Democratic Party. And the rationale, the reason given is that Booker did not make it in terms of, gaining a certain percentage point. They pulled the same thing with Andrew Yang. As we know, this is an issue. We should not be in 2020 asked to look in on a debate, a major debate at that, where we have an all-white panel. That is crazy. And it's unacceptable. And I think we have to do something about it. I don't think they can provide a sensible or logical explanation as to why this is, other than the party hasn't made enough of an effort, if any, to make it clear that it is rejecting the racist policies of the past. I mean, how do you try to appeal to the nation's voters when they don't see themselves reflected? And obviously, they don't see their issues represented as poignantly as they would with somebody who looks like them, someone who comes from their community. They know this. The Democratic Party, I think, I've had it with it. I've had it with this party. We have it in such a way, we're getting it from the point of view that, look, we are in charge. There's no apology, no explanation needed. We just are. As a matter of fact, if you really want to argue about it, argue with your community, because your community is not doing what it ought to do in order to guarantee some kind of representation via the Democratic Party. Well, that's one way of looking at it. It's the wrong way to look at it, but that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is that voters of color in this country have given so many passes to this party, despite the evidence that the party has become immune to the whole idea of reaching out to new communities and actually aggressively representing them. They make no effort whatsoever. It should bother this party that Cory Booker is not going to be on stage tonight. Whether you like Cory Booker or don't like him, that's not the point. The point is that Cory Booker and Andrew Yang and others who have come forward as candidates represent a new hope, a possible new path for the Democratic Party, new life for the Democratic Party. But instead of helping these candidates, instead of reaching out and fielding the candidates and growing this pool, which is a promising idea, you have new blood, new ideas. You listen to Andrew Yang, very exciting ideas. And Cory Booker had, I think, was a presentable candidate. He had good ideas. Nobody wanted to listen to him. And he did not have the wherewithal to pony up millions and millions of dollars to conduct his own outreach campaign. This is why I think the party has to bear tremendous blame. It seems to do nothing for its candidates, except, you know, put their hands out when the time comes for fees to be paid. In this race, it doesn't bother a Michael Blumenthal. It doesn't bother them because he's got more money than he could shake a stick at. So he'll buy, if it comes to it, he'll buy his way into the Democratic Party. And possibly even that would even lead to his election. So you can make the argument by extension that a billionaire with money to burn, how apropos is it for a party to say, well, he's entitled to be under our umbrella? But you pay no attention to a Yang or to a Booker. Makes no sense to me. And it makes even less sense that we are allowing it. We're letting the Democratic Party get away with this kind of behavior. And we shouldn't. We should walk away. Well, I already did, more than 20 years ago. The party has become just about everything except a means to really express the dire needs of constituents out there who have no other way of expressing their distress, except that they make a decision, they make a calculated decision that, well, if I support the Democratic Party, maybe somebody would emerge from this whole process that would improve my standards, improve my conditions of living, improve my employment, improve housing choices, and so forth. That's not part of the equation anymore. The equation is that the Democratic Party is usurped. It is kidnapped and held hostage by a favorite son, as in, let's say, Bill Clinton or Barack Obama, and now we have the former vice president, Joe Biden, who's laying claim to almost unilateral support from the Democratic Party, which means the people. But what is the arrangement here? Are you a party? Are you an agency? What are you? It seems to me that if you really were operating in the party spirit, this Democratic Party, you couldn't ask for more fertile soil. You couldn't ask for more. You have disaffected young people. You have people of color from all parts of the rainbow, from all over the world, who are alienated by what the society has become under Donald Trump. We don't hear of a plan. We don't hear of plans except from, you know, I talked about it before. We hear a lot from Elizabeth Warren and her plans. We haven't seen any. And everybody's playing fast and loose with the idea, based on the premise that after they reach a certain point, they are invincible. And they can trust, automatically trust, that they will get support from the masses of people. We ought to make that less of a prediction. We ought to have them worry about it. So as this show and tell, this Q&A, which they are falsely calling a debate, there's no debate going on here. There is simply the individual task undertaken to climb to the top, to climb over everybody and claim the big prize. There's such contempt for the voter. You don't need to have anything explained. You have no way of asking any questions. You have no way of giving input. The party is insulated and isolated from the people right now. It's doing its own thing. But here is the opportunity to make a difference. To make them wrong about assuming automatic support. Assuming that they don't have to account for anything. They know black people will vote for the Democratic Party and Latinos will vote for the Democratic Party. They know that young people will vote for the Democratic Party. That's their thinking. So they're not getting exercised about that. If they know certain people are going more than likely to vote for the party, why waste time and resources conducting a real campaign, as in reaching out, telling them what new ideas you have? And instead of throwing away, or instead of blithely losing good potential candidates, again, this is not to say I'm favoring this one or that one. It is just the fact you have had good people wanting to make a difference via their own candidacy. The party does not cultivate its own. It doesn't. The party is, in fact, in some cases, openly hostile to candidates seeking to run under the Democratic banner. And again, I point to Cory Booker. I point to Andrew Yang. Here are two very good people that the party lost, and it should be very, very upset about that. They are worrying about people they think have a chance of winning, and that's it. They deal with them. And so I think it is a tremendous cumulative loss when a party opts to move people with good potential aside, give them no incentive to stick around, give them no help. How do you foster good leadership? Okay, so a guy runs and he loses a race. But what do you see in his candidacy that is worth holding on to and improving? I mean, is Cory Booker suddenly a really, really bad guy? Is Andrew Yang a bad guy who shouldn't be talked to and held on to? He's not worth the investment of a party that is desperately in need of new ideas and new blood. You're still playing the old game in a new day. Well, I think people should give these things second thoughts, because you become conditioned to be brain dead. You go and vote on voting day. You go and you vote for the candidate that we want you to vote for. And it is so clear. It is so clear. In this race, a decision has been made that that person is Joe Biden. He has to come through. He has to make it through. There's a lot riding on Joe Biden's success at the polls, even if he doesn't deserve it. They'll make it happen. I talked about this many times. You see that the party has the ability to delineate and to differentiate. It's not a one-size-fits-all thing. They know how to make exceptions. They know how to push certain candidates because deals are made, just like the old days. You know, backroom deals are cut. And there's no question in my mind that the decision had been made a long time ago before the election cycle officially began, that Biden was going to be the guy. We have to save Joe Biden. There's a lot attached to the success of Joe Biden at the polls that we don't even know. But there's a lot riding on Joe Biden's success. He's got to win. So when a party decides this in secret, you know, in the old-fashioned political way, smoke-filled rooms, well, maybe not vaping rooms, maybe, but they decide how they want this to turn out, and they act accordingly. And so when they have to make a choice, and to me it's a very evident choice, you have so many people who are running, who should be looked at, who should be helped, who should be encouraged by the party itself, you know, give them a little boost. Give them some encouragement. Give them some money. You know, divide up a pot of money and say, well, we can give each of you $50,000. Each of you $100,000 to help you do whatever you have to do to improve your campaigns. We are running workshops all summer long. Here's the syllabus about how you run a campaign, what you're supposed to do, how do you get your issues across. Workshops, serious workshops that could help these candidates, because many of them may not be sexy candidates, but they're true in their heart. You know, they're not going for the lights and the crowds. They're very serious candidates, and they need help. And it seems to me that a party interested in launching its ideology, its appeal, through really attractive candidates, candidates who have platforms that make sense and who embody the Democratic Party's spirit, if you could accept that as a term. But this is not what happens. And we're back again to the old okey-doke. Orders have been given. Joe Biden must be the candidate. And that's why there's very little interest in any of the other candidates, really, by the official Democratic Party. They've made up their minds for a whole lot of reasons, many of which we don't even know, but we could surmise. The Democratic Party has already made it clear they are fully invested in the election of Joe Biden, whether we like it or not. And every effort is going to be made to support him, let the public know that the party machine is behind him, and of course they'll do everything possible to cover up the yawning gaps that we know Joe Biden has, including the most recent issue of Ukraine. So the party is quite flexible. In some cases, so rigid about standards, like tonight, when so many people who should be on that stage will not be on that stage because they have rules. You did not get X percent, and we're not waiving that rule. But a Biden who has a long laundry list of things that he should be compelled to explain, they're running interference. That's their guy. They've made it so clear, I don't know how anybody could miss the message. Biden is the guy. And in protecting Joe Biden and working diligently to assure his success and victory at the polls, by extension, they protect a whole bunch of people who are involved in a whole bunch of things that the Democrats used to call corruption. They used to call it corruption. But now, as I explained, this whole thing about the charges of impeachment, still, when you boil it down, still have to do with Joe Biden, protecting Joe Biden. That's the thrust of the Democrats' case against Trump. And I'm asking, at this time, in this climate, have you altered or in any way changed your political point of view, and therefore what your political choices will be? That's the question I pose to you today. 888-874-4888. We'll take this short break, come back to deal with your answers and responses to the question right after this. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. We're talking about, on the very day of the big debate in Des Moines, Iowa, the Democrats will be having later this evening, to decide who appears to be emerging as a definite winner. They still have a ways to go, but it's a good clue. But the backdrop of that is the conduct of the party that we don't see being examined. The party is not having a reflective moment here. They're just going ahead. And they've made up their minds that Joe Biden is the guy to protect and pull through. And a lot is resting on this. So if we are under some impression that it is all about the merit of the candidate, think again. Because we saw just in the last couple of weeks, we saw good candidates. I mean, they have potential. They need a little help, but who doesn't? And the party seems to take little, if any, interest in helping them be successful, helping them reach more and more people, advising them on issues that they consider to be important, that they don't know how to navigate the system. Those candidates are not veterans. They're new to the scene. But we see that the party is behaving very disturbingly. Supposedly, it seems that they think they can't function without these candidates because they already have their own. Very interesting behavior by this party. Tony from Orlando, you're on the air.
Hi, Trees. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Tony, for calling in.
I want to agree with you on that, with your whole premise. I think you're spot on.
Well, some people would say, is it the duty of a party to help a candidate be successful? Or is it up to the candidate to be successful?
Well, it looks like what we're seeing is we're seeing the party creating the candidate. That's what we're seeing. Because like you said, they're shielding Mr. Biden and pretty much making him the de facto candidate.
That's what I think. What does this say about, what is your attitude, therefore, now about politics?
I'm starting to, you know, the more I'm seeing this unfold, I'm starting to take your way of dealing with it. I might just abstain from it altogether because you're just so obviously corrupt. I mean, you take a look at this whole impeachment process, like you just said, it's actually linked to getting Joe Biden elected. I mean, and not only that, if you look at the whole impeachment process, Nancy Pelosi has delayed delivering the articles of impeachment to the Senate. Now, who does that hurt? That hurts the Bernie Sanders, the Warrens, all the senators that now have to sit in a trial and not be able to go out and get their name recognized. That's going to hurt those candidates, you know? Because now they have to sit in a trial. And that's all Nancy Pelosi's fault, because she delayed delivering these articles of impeachment for over 2 weeks. Matter of fact, it's been like almost a month now. Not only that, now breaking news is that corrupt Russian gas company just got hacked by Russia. So now guess who you can't bring up during an impeachment trial? You can't bring up Joe Biden and his son, which were involved with that company, because now Russia has a hand in the whole thing now. So, I mean, between the media and the Democrat Party, it's all corrupt.
What are you inclined to do this election year?
I'm thinking I'm going to sit it out. I've never did that before. I've always voted. And like I said, I think I'm gonna do like how you say, just sit it out. Because it's just obvious that they do not represent the American people. They only represent themselves and enriching themselves and their legacy wealth. And that's the Bidens, the Clintons, the Trumps. Or, you know, it's all about them enriching themselves and nothing else. It's not about serving the American people.
What is your view about what I have called the lack of concern about how the party is coming across when it refuses or it actually encourages people to drop out and not bother to bring themselves back and say, look, I've retooled, I've gotten things together. you know, and it's not because they don't have good ideas, it's they don't have money, and or they don't have an efficient staff to execute their plans. So what do you think about how the Democratic Party is relating to prospective candidates?
I think it's like you say, they don't relate to prospective candidates. That's why you're seeing people like AOC now starting to divert funds to fund like-minded candidates rather than just give all the money up to the DNC. I think she has something, she's got something going on there. And we might see something up. That's like kind of the beginning of almost forming a new party. It's the money. It all comes down to the money. It all comes down to the money. So AOC's got something going on there. And I'm not one to, you know, I'm not a big AOC fan and all that stuff, but I'm going to give her big props on what she's doing right there. But I think that's the beginning of something to come.
I think you're on the right track there. Thanks for calling in and getting us started today. Mitch from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon to you, Mitch.
Bring out the question of diversity. Do you think it would matter if a person of color or would be on the ballot? Do you think it would make a difference to the people on the streets or in the towns? I mean, it's been proved. I mean, in the past, especially with Barack Obama, everybody expected a lot from him, and he delivered nothing.
And yeah, but you're raising two issues as if they're the same. They're one and the same, but they're not. We have no control over whether a person of color will win or not win. We have no control over that. What we're discussing is the party's obligation to indicate that it has definitively parted ways from its recent past, where it's always at election time a totally white affair. People have been locked out for decades by this Democratic Party.
But do you think it would make any difference if a person of color was there? Had got the nomination, do you think it would make a difference with the people of color and other ethnic group if a person of color were elected? Do you think they would change policies?
They being who?
I'm saying, do you think the Democratic Party would change their policy if a person of color was on the ballot?
Well, it's certainly... In this day and age, you have to do things in a demonstrable way to indicate that you're conscious, even just that. You're conscious. It should bother people of the United States that we're having an election by a long-established party and everybody's white. Does that not bother you?
No, it doesn't. It leads me to question, but would it make a difference? I mean, if a person of color were there, would it make a difference, you think? I mean,
yeah, but you asked
we
me
had
the wrong
people
question.
Of color there
if you don't mind me
before.
Saying so, that's the wrong question. We don't know whether it would make a difference, but we do have thoughts about whether the party has an obligation, a duty to communicate that it's not still in the dark ages. I have no idea if Andrew Yang's presence or we have anybody's presence. We have Michael Bloomberg literally buying his way in. I don't hear anybody asking whether it will it's a turnoff for Jews. No, he's doing his thing, and he's allowed to do that. We don't break it down when it comes to whites in the society. They can do what they want to do. But then the questions arise, as such as you have raised, would it make a difference? Why is that now a legitimate question? Why is that a legitimate question?
Why is it?
Yeah, why is that a legitimate question?
Because if you want to appeal to, you say like, you're saying, why would a person of color be on the ballot if you get up there and you're not going to advocate for the people? 98% of the people, of black people, put Barack Obama, but he showed nothing to
but
us.
That's, you're arguing two entirely different things. You're arguing that putting somebody on the ballot necessarily means that they would win. Because
if Bloomberg got in office, he would advocate for the Jewish people. He would advocate for Israel, I think. Schumer, he advocates for Israel. You know,
okay.
I'm not
so
saying
what's
Jewish,
wrong with that?
But Israel. Nothing's wrong with it.
But why do you say it that way? He advocates for Israel. I'm sure he does, and it's clear that he does. But what's wrong with that? Why does that
nothing
make
nothing wrong
it
with it.
Suspicious.
But I'm saying a person of color gets there. He's no longer a person of. Barack Obama even said it. I'm not a president for Africans of America. I'm a president for all of America. You know, we don't have no problem.
But don't
with
you
that.
Understand politics? 98, you expect him to say anything akin to, "I am the president for black people only." You really
no,
expect
I'm just saying,
that?
Like when you get 98% of the vote. Of people of color voting for you, you're supposed to show your appreciation.
Yeah, you show your appreciation by being a responsible, innovative leader.
Yeah.
Just because overwhelmingly, because this happens in every election, there would be overwhelming support from one constituency to the other. But I don't know that you're making a strong point here today.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you. 888-874-4888. No, the point I'm making here is about the conduct of the party. The party is behaving very badly. And because it is also missing out on an opportunity to communicate a different message to all voters. But it just isn't doing it. And it's also defending itself by casting, you know, indirectly they're doing it, but they're doing it by allowing people to believe that from the party's perspective, the lack of success of several of the candidates who have dropped out or who have not even been allowed in because they didn't qualify is not even encouraging the party to look at its policies. Is it? When you tell an Andrew Yang and you see this guy is a stick of dynamite, he's got so much energy, and he brings a remarkable freshness, a new perspective to politics, why would you be so calm that you're losing him? Why would you be so calm that you've lost some of your best new talent? Why would you be so calm? I think it would bother you. And you would want to have a bunch of meetings among the leaders of the Democratic Party. This is a crisis as far as I'm concerned, and I'm looking from the outside in. It is a tremendous loss. You know, there should be some space where a party that is supposedly forward-looking becomes concerned when Cory Booker is not in the mix, when Andrew Yang is not in the mix. That should cause concern because of the policies that you're enacting, which are having the net result of driving the very kind of people you need away. Khalil from South Carolina, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing, Trish?
Okay, how are you, Khalil?
I'm a little perked up after the last call. It was very interesting.
Okay. For what reasons are you perked up?
I'm trying not to laugh. Because the call is just very interesting. I love the way you handle callers. I love the way you handle business. And, you know, it seemed like you put many opportunities on the table for a proper rebuttal, but they just did not materialize. Anyway, that's maybe I'm missing something, but that's the way it may seem. Does that make sense?
I don't want you to faint now. I want you to bring your points home.
I mean, you know, people should know by now. They're not going to win a debate with you. That's just forget about that. That's why it's, I mean, come on. But anyway, I'm surprised no one has brought up Bloomberg, because I think one of the biggest stories that's not being talked about is that he can buy his way into a win, because, and the way I look at it, it's to an advantage not to be on the debate stage. Because like the maleo-fascist that we have now, right, he puts his message out, no filter, through tweet. But Bloomberg will be able, he doesn't have to debate anybody. He just gets his message out with money.
There you go. He has
and
solved the problem.
True.
He doesn't have to interface with the party structure at all.
Nope. He has real money. Not that, you know, real money, long money. Old money. So I think that, and it's just like, no, you know, nobody's saying, I don't, maybe I missed it, but it's just a wow, that's brilliant. I mean, if that's how you want to act. But, you know, yeah, you know, the DNC, and I like what Ocasio is doing. I think that, and not paying her dues, because the DCCC, you know, that's a form of protest. Now, she has to understand there will be repercussions for that, but, you know, if she can get more people around her, maybe follow her, then that could be the start of something.
The thing is, these things, as important as they are and could be, usually started out as a spur of the moment idea, as in the case of Ocasio-Cortez. When you see, you have a vision, you have, and you know what is about to happen to you the minute you put your foot out there, you have to really do strategic planning. I'll give her some points for being very community-oriented, organizing at that level, and keeping that level as, you know, this is your engine, and she's clearly communicated where she places herself and the engine that she is going to be depending on to launch a new idea. Number two, though, is that she hasn't, or she doesn't have the kind of protection that she needs. When you start doing these kinds of things, if it doesn't occur to you that you're really trying to reorganize the political status quo, you're reorganizing all of that, and you're bringing political power truly to the community level, you got to have some You got to have your army in place.
I like the way you put that. Right. So she needs to be working from the back end. In other words, have the momentum behind her before she makes these types of steps.
I think, but it's safe for me to say that because I'm not in the situation as she is. But I'm saying this looking from the outside in. This is a mistake that is repeatedly made. And this is one of the things that the Democratic Party, if it were forward thinking, it would have some kind of resource within the party where people could be put in touch with other people to get advice. What do you think about this? What do you think about that? And I understand too that the more you share, the more vulnerable you'll become because you're telling people what you're thinking. But at some point, we have to, you know, pause and really think things through and not think that you could win all 10 points that you have in one fell swoop. Pick the one that you're going after and build on that. That would be your focal point, and everybody would know that. Like I said, you know, hardly anything is said about the missing candidate who is buying his way. He is saying, look, I know how you guys operate. You think I want to be part of your craziness? No. I don't need you to help me fail. So he's not very, very heavy in the areas where they are. He has gone to new territory completely. He's campaigning in those districts, trying to familiarize himself with the people and have the people get to know him, whether you like it or not. You know what I mean? This is his tactic. He has a plan. He's got the money to implement this plan, and he's going ahead with it.
He has a plan. He has the money to implement the plan, and that's exactly what he's doing.
And he's prepared. He's prepared. This may not work at all. It may not work at all. He's taking a big gamble too. But he believes in what he's doing so strongly that that is what is driving him. There's got to be a different way. I know how to do it differently, and I'm out here. If he were to leave everything up to the Democratic Party, his candidacy would be dead.
You Treese, and there's a caveat to the Bloomberg thing, and then I want to say, look what happened to Castro. Now, he had wonderful ideas, and if the DNC were serious, they could have given him some networking abilities to succeed. But the caveat with Bloomberg is that lately he said that, okay, even if I don't make it, I'm going to use my money to back whoever the nominee is.
Yeah, well, he gives them something. You have to understand, you know, sometimes what people are saying, you have to understand where they're coming from. He cannot afford to be an eternal enemy. He still has to
that
live.
That is so shrewd. How shrewd. We remember how that he is shrewd. That is. Well.
So you build in a little cushion for yourself. They know where you're coming from and what is important to you, but they're likely to give you the elastic you need because you're not asking them for money. You're not asking them for anything. You are a total self-made campaign.
Wow.
So if he wins, hip hip hooray. If he doesn't win, he's sending the message early, I do not intend to be a threat to you. I intend to contribute to a new day, a new way of thinking. So if you're going to decide that you're going to hate me, well, that's on you. I don't hate you. I'm not running on the premise of hate. I'm trying to do something different. I'm willing to put my money in it. And you have approved it. So how bad could I be?
That's just amazing how this thing worked out like that. He had a goal as a goal. He's going to, and either way, he meets his goal.
Well, sure. But the tactic is what I'm talking about. Either way, he can't lose. Nobody could say they suspect that he was doing something underhanded. He tells you exactly what he wants to do. He's showing you, look, I just funded this over here. We have this initiative being carried out over there, and I'm getting closer to the goal, which I told you about.
Mm-hmm. The goal is to make sure that this maniac does not get another term.
Right. He says, if I can't do it, if I don't do it, I will fund whoever else can. Well, you know, it's all drama too, but you can't argue that the guy's being surreptitious and flying under the radar. He's very open. He's very clear.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. And that's the only thing that can give me a smile in these times. It's a little bit much. It's a little bit much.
But look how they're treating. I'm looking at the people they already have in their midst that they've dismissed out of hand. I think Andrew Yang is getting a very raw deal. I think that the party is missing the point when it ignores the repercussions or the message they're sending when they say, look, we don't need this guy.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need him running. So we're going to give him a hard time. He can't run. Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. Great calls. Thank you. And we'll connect again with each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.